son. Let them now call up Ralph to say some words in this morning.
I wish I shared more for the straight as we can go. But I'm grateful. Because it's a long life when we spread this love around for now.
He said my name was Mike Pia, but my name is Michael Leon Pia. And my mother and father, Isaac, Ed, and Shirley, named me after the angel, which I'm very proud of. And when we were young kids, I always thought Martin would be my aunt and uncle. But I think everybody knows the angels, if you're friends of them, you are a family. And very close to us. But when I was 5 years old, in 1965, I was at the synagogue leading my dad, and I was kind of hard to control, like to run around a lot. And so he grabbed my arm and said, "Mike, you can sit down here for 30 minutes and buy you a horse." So what if I do it and sit down for 30 minutes for a horse? So I sat there, and probably the only time in my entire life that I didn't move for 30 minutes. So we walked out of the synagogue, and I said, "Lee, where's my horse?" He said, "It's on its way, it's coming." Okay. So 5 years later, pretty much every day that we would see Margie and Lee, I'd go, "Lee, where's my horse? It's on its way, it's coming." Okay. I asked Joanne, I said, "Joanne, do you think your dad would ever buy me that horse?" And she said, "Oh, just keep bugging him, it'll happen." So I always imagined as a kid that this Cadillac would drive up to my house with a horse thing behind it, and Lee would be pulling his horse out of the back. Didn't happen. So about 10 years later, after probably 300 times of Lee was my horse, my dad and Lee took the lawn leaders. That was my introduction to horse racing, which I loved and had a true passion for. So next I wanted to own a horse, a racehorse, a lawnmower. So I said, "Lee, where's my horse?" And he said, "It's coming, it's on its way." So I was 15 then. So for the next 20 to 30 years, every time I saw Lee, he would call the phone, Margie would call, "Lee, where's my horse?" "So it's coming, it's on its way." So last summer, my wife and I came up, and we had just an unbelievable, wonderful day at the condo in Bellevue with Margie and Lee, Vicky and Al and Courtney, and my sister Elaine. And we walked in the condo and I said, "Lee, where's my horse?" He's kind of looked at me, and then he went, "Ah, it's coming, it's on its way." So I was walking by the kitchen, I heard him over talking to Martin, and he goes, "He still remembers the damn horse." So I never did get the horse, but I think I got a lot more than the horse. He got me. And he was a really special person to my family. When my father passed away at the age of 52, he was one of his best friends. He was there for our family. And Rob said it perfectly. He was protecting us. And I think he called my mother probably every single night, right, Margie? At 10:30 at night, and talked to her. Just interfered in. And I think for the next 10, 20 years, he called her at least once a week, once a month. Usually late at night, we were at her place, and one of the planes all the week. So I always grabbed him and asked him my horses. But anyways, he was an unbelievable man, so proud, and my middle name, named after Lee,
that's Michael Leon. And I know he's up there with my dad right now. Thank you for your time.
Call now upon us and to see your words like that.
We don't get to choose parents that nurture us. Sometimes we're fortunate enough to find parents that we choose. The angel was that parent to my brother Don and I. For nearly 40 years, Lee was my chosen parent, my friend, and my confidant. To learn from Lee, all one had to do was watch and listen. To understand Lee, one has to become aware of how he rose from humble beginnings to a level of harmony in life that few people ever reach. It was simple. Lee combined generosity and love and success in a balance rarely seen. First and foremost, there was his love of family, his unqualified love for Margie, Vicki, Ralph, Joanne. Then there was his experiences in life. During the Battle of the Bulge, and later, building a successful business. All by a kid that sold newspapers and cleared a pipe for a nickel apiece. Lee once told me he made more on tips than he did selling newspapers because he was always so positive and liking me. One thing Lee always said, you never want to be that guy walking down the street and someone says, there goes that so-and-so, Lee. Lee had a lot of sayings. Lee was really shaped and affected by his experience in World War II. He told the story of an officer denigrating him for being Jewish. And as Ralph said, Lee was a scrappy guy. And he went out to that officer, only to be brought before his lieutenant for disciplinary action. Lee explained what had happened and told the lieutenant he would do it again if that officer ever made fun of him for being Jewish. The lieutenant was so impressed and liked Lee so much, he took him under his wing, making him his personal assistant and driver. This literally saved Lee's life as he talked Lee out of volunteering for what turned out to be a suicide mission during the Battle of the Bulge. As I said, Lee would often finish that story by saying, yeah, I was pretty scrappy. And he would say, you know, I was a Sephardi kid. I didn't take any guff when I was young. You know, I used to be a boxer. I used to box apples and went at you. Lessons I learned was that one has to learn to say things to people in the right way, a nice way. I always marvel that Lee had such a great way with people. If Lee wanted something or a concession from someone, he seldom had to ask for it. People just liked him so well that before you knew it, they would be offering him what he wanted. It was quite remarkable. And a special thanks to Margie for letting Lee get away with Don and I to Vegas over the years. We really had a lot of fun on our annual trips. I think we celebrated our 25th anniversary trip to Vegas a couple of years ago. It was meant to be a perk for Lee and our way of saying thanks for meeting and doing so much for our family. As a professional, Lee guided the resurrection of our family business, buffering the difficult but charming personality of our father and helping Don and I successfully navigate some amazing business transactions. Lee just knew how to act. And I remember he always said, look, relax, make this decision. And remember, you never want to have a lot of weight on your shoulders. And boy, did Lee love Martin. He would tell us trips and shopping in Vegas to make her happy. And we'd show up at work with the rare
and tastefully stylish new clothes, you can tell how Margie went to Nordstrom and got things for him. We adore Margie. Kindness and generosity, but maybe more important, compassion, make me special. We made you feel special no matter who you were, whether it was Margie's sister Rachel, who always worked to improve her life, or our Uncle Wayne. We always watched out for those less fortunate and able to care for themselves. So Lee, as you would have said, really and truly, you will be missed. But more importantly, remember for the lessons in life and time, and the amazing legacy that we've done. Call up a little bit there. May God be with you. We love you.
I first met Lee in 1965. So, yeah, on the 5 minute apartment house, just my 43 years ago, I was with us. And so, thank you.
He took life very seriously, and he had an enormous sense of responsibility that we all loved him. It was especially to his family and friends, but also to his religious community, to his country. It was a responsibility he felt just by virtue of being part of the human community, to pay his taxes on time, to show up at a meeting on time, to be respectful of other people. We love order and routine. We like to do the same things the same way that we want to. And there's countless examples of this. We call it blending of the perception of color. And we're talking to you. Since your dad was in here every day, what do you do for the business? He was never general manager for that. He saw the things that's what he did. Another example comes to mind is in the 20 years or so that we grew up on Sunday night, he said exactly the same things he mentioned. Never heard anything was here. And I remember one time when we got there, I came and said, this place, just to put it right there. And then we should go with it. So later in life, when it was kind of easier for us to come into our house, he came to our house. And as soon as we built it, he quickly staked out his chair, which was my favorite chair. And again, we've been doing this for 18 years now, and even today he never sat in another place in our house. He said it's my chair. But it's one that I gladly relinquish just to have him there. Well, there are countless examples of the repeated characteristics of his life. The point is that it was really one of his kind of strategies for dealing with his life that was challenging. After learning about his youth and the sacrifices he made over the years, I sometimes think this strategy was born at a time when there was no order or control that he could exert over life. Life was challenging when he was young. There's a picture of him, a couple of pictures that I'll never forget. And one of them was with his classmates, and I don't know if it was like freshman in Garfield, maybe an eighth grade picture or something. And he was a complete class of kids. And he was several inches shorter, way smaller than even the girls in that picture. And, you know, it's going to be cruel, and obviously that had certain challenges. But he was very scrappy, he was hard to work, and he certainly stood his ground. So, the other picture is his basketball team. And yet, he was the most scrawny little person in his basketball team. And he loved basketball. And he was a target from there, probably more than he was. So, I think of that time, I think of that picture as a symbol of, you know, like reality based on some of his aspirations. He also had the aspiration and the motivation of a greater kind of intelligence to go to college, and even med school, or perhaps become a doctor, if you should talk about that. But once again, reality intervened. And as a teenager, he had to work to support the family. He had to stay in the airlines, in the possession. And then he had to go to France and World War II to become a parent. So sometimes in life, especially in his life, it seems like someone else is calling the shots. And one of the ways he dealt with this was to have routines in life. And I left him for it. For all the challenges, though, he faced life with a good natured cheerfulness that prepared him to do this. He'd been around the block a few times. He knew the bright side and the dark side of human nature. But he believed in it. suffering. And even be with you.
To be with an example of the abundant human spirit, a hero of sorts, that makes you proud to be a fool and proud to be a simple one.
On behalf of the family, I want to thank everybody for coming today. It's an honor to be with you. My first recollection of these 7 years ago was in the context of the High Holy Services in Ezra Seraph. And when I was with the family the other night, we were talking about Lee's complete devotion to the synagogue, Ezra Seraph, and to his Sephardic lifestyle and his identity. I just want to say that we really appreciate, unfortunately, having to be involved in the services today. But it's the least that we can do with the synagogue for Lee Angel. His family. How would I identify him to other people when I was referring to them and during the services? Is that man in that row where they're smiling, and his smile was raised at all times. Cheerful is not the word for it. He was a very, very peaceful man, a man at peace with himself. And that came out a lot in the conversation we had the other night when I go visit families, when there's a passing in the family. You get a sense when you walk into the room. There's tension in the air, or if there's a family that doesn't have any end closing accounts. And the Angel family has everything put together. And it was a sense of peace that descended over the room when we began our conversation about Lee. I was trying to think of what I could add on behalf of the community to their respects to Lee. And the first thing that came to mind was something that was already referred to in one of the talks, was that Lee was very concerned that no one should say there is such and such to be able to walk over there. He didn't want to have a bad day, he wanted to have a good day. And one of the phrases that we cite at a Jewish funeral is Tov Shem Tov Mishem Tov Yom HaMavet Yom Hivaldo, that a good name is better than good wine, or Shemen oil. Has within it the word shem, name. And good oil in the olden days was, of course, of great value. Rabbis wanted to stress how important a person's reputation and integrity was to their life. So they took the word shemen, word oil, and in it they found shem. Shem, a good name, is richer and more important than all the physical luxuries in the world, symbolized by the Shem. Yom HaMavet, the day of death, is better than the day of birth, which sounds hard to really process. Why would the day of death be better than the day of birth? And the simple understanding is that a person is born, as I've said on past occasions, you don't really know what they're going to become. You just see potential there, you don't see anything actual. When a person passes away, in this case, Lee after a very nice, long life, 93 years old, you get to summarize and look at life from the bird's eye view and ask yourself, what did this person accomplish? So, Tov Shem Yishem and Tov, Lee cared about his good name, he was a person of tremendous integrity, and indeed on the day of his funeral, we are looking at his life and saying, you know what, Yom HaMavet, the day of passing, and the funeral that's paying our respects to him, is indeed better the day of birth, we get to look at Lee's life and summarize it. And in that context, I want to share with you a teaching from Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers. You know, between Pesach and Shavuot, between Passover and the Feast of Weeks, we have a very strong tradition, and in Ezra Seraph, and Sephardic people call him too, we read Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers, in Latino. On the side, we have an English and a Hebrew version of Pirkei Avot. And we just finished Perek Bet, second chapter. And there's a Mishnah in the second chapter of Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers. And to give you some background, Ethics of Our Fathers is concerned about what we call midot, character traits. Moshe kibel Torah mi-Sinai, Moshe got the Torah from Har Sinai, and you would think if you ask yourself, what is Torah? What is the Torah? It is a set of laws. But the rabbis felt that alongside all the laws, the bedrock, the foundation of what it means to be a good Jew, is to first be a very, very good human being. So they engaged in a deep discussion with thousands of years of commentary, almost 2,000 years of commentary, on how to be a good person. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, go out and see what is the straight path that a person should cling to. Rabbi Eliezer says, a good eye, you have to have a good eye. Rabbi Yeshua says, a good friend. Rabbi Yossi says, a good neighbor. Rabbi Shimon says, see the consequences of one's actions. Rabbi Elazar says, a good heart. Which the chief rabbi responded, I see the words of Rabbi Elazar ben Arach better than all yours, because your words are included in his. In other words, the final character trait of Lev Tov, good heart, really is an all-encompassing character trait, and it includes all the other qualities we mentioned previously by the other sages. And in Rabbeinu Yonah, his commentary in Pirkei Avot, he explains the introductory question, what is the straight path that a Christian should cling to? And he says that the idea is to cling to one trait, to have one particular idea or quality, and be complete within that quality, as opposed to being a jack of all, I can use the pun, a jack of all traits. A person can be a master of none of those traits. So it's important to identify with one principle that guides your life. And the debate between the rabbis, well, all the ideas are very good, is what is the concept, what is the trait that best encapsulates the value that a person should have guiding them? What is a good eye? A good eye is the trait of generosity. Trait of generosity. Well, the angel was a quiet practitioner of this good eye, who wasn't looking at his own property and his own earnings as solely his, but shared with others, whether it was shared with the family, whether it was helping his parents fund their home. As we heard, he went to work at a very young age. Didn't have the opportunity to become that doctor. He took a responsibility, and his earnings went to his dear parents. He was fulfilling the mitzvah, kibud av v'aim. And as I heard from the family in stories that I'm sure there's many details that we have not yet heard, really everybody was his kid. The relationships, some of the strongest relationships he had, were with his children's friends. They sense this trait of the good eye, the generosity of spirit that characterized the angel. And then there were a whole group of friends, many of whom are sadly no longer with us. A good friend from you choose a good friend. The good friend that you choose helps you, guides you, serves as a sounding board for you. And as Rabbeinu Yonah says, with a good friend you accustom yourself that another spirit be pleased from you. In other words, that you bring joy to another individual. Our sages tell us that a person's best friend, love your neighbors, yourself, your friend is yourself, is one's spouse, one's wife. The ultimate mitzvah is to be a good spouse, be a good wife or a husband. And that, I had a coffee with Margie last year. We sat and talked for about an hour and a half. She bought the coffee. And as well as all the other fascinating aspects of the angel home, what really is, of course, most important is that you bring joy to your spouse, a good friend. Rabbi Yossi says a good neighbor. Pick 5, 6, 7, 8 people. And by relating to your neighbors who aren't your blood relatives, you have a connection to the world. But the neighbor is just there coincidentally, the neighborhood person. They may not have any deep relationship with you, but if you're able to make a connection with people who literally live around you, you are learning to take that generosity of spirit referred to at the beginning, and that love that you're able to demonstrate to your closest friend, and share a little snippet of that with the world. The good neighbor represents the world. Rabbi Shimon says, see the consequences of one's actions. Lee was a very, very clever and very methodical person. for someone who does not have extensive academic training and had to learn through experience, he had a tremendous sense of judgment. In the world of numbers and math and business, he was a genius. He just was able to figure things out without using a paper and pen at all. That was happening inside his mind. Secretly, the clocks were turning, and he was able to figure it out. When you see something has reward at the beginning, says Rabbeinu Yonah, that at the end it will bring loss, such a person will distance himself from that activity. And Lee was a master in the world of business and also the world of human relationships. If he saw something that was going to lead him ultimately in the wrong direction, he would stay away from it. Rabbi Elazar says a good heart. What is a good heart? Well, it's not identical to the generosity of spirit and the good eye example, but it's the trait of willpower, the trait of will, the ability to stick with a project, to be committed to an idea, to be loyal not just to people, but also to projects and to values. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, this is the tolerant one who is not short-tempered, distancing himself from the trait of anger, and answers softly. But the only example we have of Lee getting angry was when he was defending the family or his Jewish identity. Those are the exceptions. As his character was filled with this sense of strong will, tolerance for others, appreciation for others, and understanding. So after Rabbi Elazar says what he says, the rabbi of the group says, I think he's hit the nail on the head. A good heart includes within it all of the other traits we talked about. Choose that path. The angel, a person, a good heart, the value of the son of Rabbi Elazar, and you are guaranteed a good, fulfilling life. The kind of support we receive here today from friends and from family and all those who love me. Until we got anything. Please rise.